Hey, got the morning show with Aaron here, Raglan Community Radio. We've got our councillor Lisa Thompson in the studio. Morning, Lisa.
Morning, kia ora. Look at that rain coming down again, Aaron.
Yeah, it won't last long. It'll be a little bit and it'll be gone.
That's fantastic because, as you know, we've got our official wharf opening at 10 o'clock this morning.
Right, that's why you need to be, you're in a bit early this morning.
That's right.
Prepare and because for that. You've got to go and sweep the wharf.
And also, I'm on the barbecue.
All right, okay.
Yep, so we've got a barbecue happening with some sausages for those who come on down. And I'm hoping the clouds will part and the sun will shine by 10 o'clock for the karakia and the opening.
The clouds will part and the sun will shine in about 5 minutes, I'd say.
Oh, fantastic.
But then there'll be a bit more rain. There's little bits of rain coming through.
A bit of pollution.
Just bring your brolly. You've got your brolly?
Yep, I've got my brolly in the car, actually, in my jacket. Okay. And so a little bit more pollution. Rain?
Is it pluvial?
I think pluvial or something like that.
I know I talk about the weather every day. I'm not a meteorologist, though.
Oh, yeah, that is a word for rain, I believe. But anyway, there you go, on a Friday morning. So I'm really excited.
The wharf project is finished, does this mean?
It is finished. So we're actually not only doing the karakia for the opening of the wharf. In fact, I've just told a lie. It won't be finished in its entirety because we are still to plant some more mature pahutakawa trees into a couple of the garden boxes. And they will be planted at a more suitable time of the year. So they
middle of winter or something.
Yeah, so they will actually have an opportunity to flourish at the right time of year. So those will be the items that won't be there. But we will be unveiling the Pā Kahawai, the piece of work by Simon Te Whero, which is really exciting. I was actually down at the wharf on Wednesday, and I saw Simon and his partner down there, and they were installing with our staff the last parts of the Pā Kahawai.
So where is that
literally
exactly?
Gone in.
Where will that be placed?
That is placed? Actually on the seaward side, you know, the north-facing side of the wharf, the northwest-facing side.
So it's on the wharf then?
It's actually on the walkway. You know where the wooden walkway is?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And then you walk past that, and there's a little car park and a little bit further on. It's basically where – do you remember where the old power pole used to be that was on a lean, the concrete one, just past that wooden walkway?
Not really. Is it – which side of the silos?
It's
before you get to the silos?
Just before the silos.
Okay, there we go. Everyone knows where the silos are. So.
Yeah, so just before the silos on the northwestern side.
So you'll see it when you drive into
yes,
that area.
Yes, and it's along the walkway. So there's Simon's Pā Kahawai. Then there are the information boards, which are exciting, and a map with many of the ancient place names of around the harbour.
Cool.
That's there.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting time as well as the boards that Dennis has worked on around the more contemporary history of the wharf.
Okay.
So that's exciting.
I have to check. I've been down there. I was sneaking around trying to walk around on the steps when I wasn't supposed to in the evening while I was waiting for chips one night. It's already that's a project that. It's almost an unexpected one because most of that money came from council. So,
no, most government. Government.
I meant to say government.
Yeah, provincial growth fund. Back in the end of 2019, and then the second tranche of the Better Off funding through the Three Borders Reform.
Yeah.
With a portion of money coming from council, that had already been allocated through the long term plan for the piles under the wharf to be done.
We talked about that last time. That money must have come from the Harbour Board lease land.
It did come from there. So it's an exciting project, and it's neat that it's finally finished because it's been a long time in the making, and I'm really proud of it because it has been a collaboration between the community board, the contractors, and our staff who've led that.
Yeah, okay. Not much more to say. Go and have a look. And the thing's at 10 o'clock today, the opening.
Yes,
the
official opening is at 10 o'clock this morning. That's right.
Okay. Now, a project that's just started down between the Bow Street Jetty and the walkway to Papahua, the bridge to Papahua. You can't walk down there anymore. I'm sure a lot of people have discovered that.
And that's been in the pipeline, as you know, for a while.
Yeah.
So that's just for a period of time to put in the railings and to upgrade the footpath itself. So
make it wider.
Yeah, make it wider. And because, as you know, and we've spoken about it before, it's work that needed to be done.
Yeah, and so people will be able to get from, if you go around the museum end or the backpackers end,
that's exactly
get across
right.
There.
And it's just for a period of time. It's not forever.
Mm. And Joe's Takeaways is on holiday this week and next week, so there's no reason to go over there anyway.
And if you did, just take the long way around.
Yeah, yeah. So that I did read that would be August before that was wrapped up. So yeah, that's a fairly substantial project. Will they then work on the bit that's open at the moment, will they then work on that afterwards? Is that the plan, do you know?
Not currently. We don't have the budget for that.
Oh, okay. That'll be a future budget.
Yeah, that would be future.
So speaking of future budgets, the annual plan, are the deliberations happening at the moment? What's happening? Because people have had their chance to make
That's
a submission.
Right. And that closed on the last week.
Were there many submissions? I feel like there wasn't a lot of turnout at the meetings.
I actually don't know, and I should have asked, so my apologies for that. I don't know. I haven't got anything that says how many submissions we have received. I hope we got a lot, but if it follows suit of the experience of Hamilton and other councils, it's the lowest turnout for submissions, but I can't comment on how many we've got. Hopefully we've got heaps.
I mean, from my perspective, like, the real deal is next year when the LTP, the full plan is done, after the council, the government has made all its stuff clear, and the council can figure out what it wants to do.
Yeah, and I don't think that we will wait for next year. Myself and other councillors are of the mind, as soon as this is completed, we really need to go out and work with our communities on the long-term plan and really look at what we would like to have versus what we need. So what can we take away?
Yeah.
You know, and if we want a better level of service for our, for example, our gravel roads, are we prepared to pay more for that? And what would we consider unnecessary? So those are the really big conversations that we will be having in the coming months, because we need to get onto that as soon as possible. We can't wait until next year, you know, January or February, to do this process, because it's going to be quite a large body of work in terms of working with our communities.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, folks, if you haven't heard much of our discussions over the last couple of months, there's big issues with how councils get funded now. I put the blame in the way we've been running the economy for the last 40 years. It's inevitably got us to this point where it's the difference between the rich, the haves and the have-nots, and most of us are the have-nots compared to previous, you know, to where we were 40 years ago. So that's why there's not much money for rates.
But I also think there is an expectation from communities wanting more services to be provided, whereas before the services were not as broad as they are now.
But that's been the history of councils, and before that the councils were amalgamated road boards. It was always like the infrastructure for this country was always getting more and more sophisticated, more and more sophisticated for the last, 150 years? And so we've got that built into us as an expectation that things are always going to get improved and made better. And maybe we are at the point now where we have to change that.
Well, we definitely have to have those discussions with our communities around what we do want, what we need, as opposed to a want. And you know, it was interesting because David, my fellow councillor David White, shared population across New Zealand and where the populations are. And we're really underpopulated, even though, you know, we've got record numbers of immigration.
So that's in the district, our Waikato district.
Across the country, you know. And
But when you say we, you're talking about the district compared to the rest of the country.
No, I'm talking about as a country.
Compared to other countries.
As a country, and we've got a small population to service a large area, and very diverse communities across our district, as you know, but across Aotearoa as well. And so we have taxes and we have our rates, and so we don't have a large population to service the infrastructure that we do have. So we really have to look at that and the underinvestment. And I don't know if you listened to James Shaw's speech in Parliament on Wednesday, I think it was. And he said, he talked about, whilst he was in, and particularly in the last couple of terms, around what they had to face. And he realised that because you are doing the daily stuff, whether it's severe weather events or an eruption or a pandemic, all of these things as well as business as usual, you start kicking the can down the road to the, you know, years down the road.
It's hard to think big picture stuff when you're in the weeds with what's happening this week. Yeah.
And I think that's where we find ourselves in local government as well, is that, you know, we're looking at three waters. We're looking at our roads and fixing the potholes as we should, and rubbish, and being able to strategically think about the next 10 years and putting the resources to that. Those big ones like climate change or building better in order to anticipate what will happen with the changing weather and all of that, that seems almost unfathomable when you look at that and that when you're working with the daily. So I think that's what's happened in terms of our underinvestment across the country in our infrastructure.
I would hope that new governments coming in, they would have had the space to do that big picture thinking, but it's very clear that this government didn't. Even more than any other previous government. To be honest, I didn't think Labor had done much big picture thinking. They were surprised to find they were the government in 2017. And then they had the mother of all emergencies going on through their time. So that kind of, that was that.
But we've never had a coalition government before made up of three parties, have we? You know, so I think that...
We're not in this dog, wag the dog, tail wags the dog scenario that we have now. Certainly the minor parties, that there may have been times when there were two, but they didn't have the power that they...
The opportunity and the access to make decision-making.
The disproportionate power that these ones seem to have. Yeah.
And to determine what... is coming out of central government as well in such a ferocious manner.
I mean, they're starting to get pushback. Well, they're getting lots of pushback, but their poll numbers have gone down in a couple of polls recently. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Which is actually really surprising at this point, 5 months into
a
government. Usually, they're more popular than they were when they got elected.
And usually the Prime Minister is more popular than... their popularity grows, but it's actually diminished. And so too have all three parties' popularity have diminished in the first 5 months of their term.
Yeah. I've heard there's a few ACT voters who are surprised at what they got after they voted. So anyway, that's that background. And in the midst of that comes the Māori Ward seat discussion. We're calling it this discussion because everyone's having a discussion, but the government's made up its mind about what it wants to do, has it?
They have a proposed bill on Māori wards, and that is, if you remember, back in 2021, the Labor government enabled councils to make decisions to establish Māori wards without having to go to a binding referendum or a poll, because that poll provision was never a fair mechanism for Māori participation and decision making in the context of local government, and that Māori would always be outnumbered because, for example, in Waikato District Council, Māori make up about 24% of the population. So only 5% of the general population can call for a poll. And that means a poll to not have Māori wards. And I think I've said that before. So it was a racist piece of legislation. So it was taken out and... many councils across New Zealand made the decision when they engaged with their communities, including hapu, in their areas, and 45 councils determined to establish a Māori ward or two Māori wards, like we did at Waikato District Council. And the two Māori wards came about because of the population. So you remember we did the representation review, and the representation review determines how big your ward is, how many councillors you have.
So that was per population. Two wards out of the total would be Māori wards, as a rough approximation of the population.
That's exactly right. Yeah, out of all of the wards that we have. And contrary to some of the rhetoric and downright lies, actually, of this current government, saying that somehow Māori have special rights because of the Māori wards is not true, and they still only receive one vote, as do all of the other wards. And no other ward, whether general or rural wards, are faced with the same provision to have to go to a poll. They are just established right.
And most councils have about 13 seats, 12, 13 seats, something
12 or
like
13
that.
Seats with a mayor that sits across all of those.
So, my simplest argument to the people who were concerned about, who were believing this idea that was Māori taking over, is 2 out of 13 or 14 seats.
It's 2 out of 13 votes.
A vote, so it's not. That's nothing. You can't do anything with that. What it does do, though, is it creates representation, and we need to remember we're not just in a democracy; we're in a representative democracy, and it's supposed to represent all the people.
And if you look at our current coalition government, we're a party who can have 8% or 6% of the popularity, then determines 60% of what's happening in government. So where is the fairness in that? So if you made a comparison, the Māori wards or the Māori councillors, they went out and they campaigned. Those who campaigned, like I did, they campaigned under their own steam and received votes from those who are on the Māori roll. And those who are on the Māori roll can only vote for those who are in the Māori
twice.
Seat.
Yeah,
there's not two votes, although they do get to vote, of course, for the mayor, as does the people on the general seats. They get to vote for their preferred ward representative, and then they get to vote for their preferred mayor.
So let's talk about the practicalities of having these two Māori ward councillors around the table. Like, what benefits does it bring to the council as a group of people making decisions when you've got those two people there?
Well, it brings diversity. It brings different thinking. It brings, in a way, a voice of Māori into the decision-making. And so, our Māori wards contribute to our decision-making through that diversity. Otherwise, we would be sitting in a room of pretty much of a muchness without a view of what others may need within our district. And if you look at Waikato District Council, and we're in the heart of the Kingitanga, so of our consideration and our partnership with hapu across our district is really important us. And so they bring that voice and different ways of thinking to the decision-making table. And the contribution to all of council, whether it's in infrastructure, the sustainability and wellbeing, policy and regulatory, into other committee, subcommittees, our solid waste, right across the board, as do my other fellow councillors who aren't of Māori descent, bring a voice for their communities, to that decision-making table, as I do for Whangaroa.
I remember talking to Fred Litchwark about this. He was on the regional council, and they had Māori ward seats there for a long time. I can't remember where they didn't. And his comment was simply that those two members of the council bought knowledge that he just didn't have.
That's exactly right about the area,
and he didn't know what he would do without them.
And that's exactly right. It's different knowledge and it's different perspectives, and it's adding to the diversity of decision making that we have in council.
And there's a lot of whipping up of fears being done by some at the political level.
It's not being done by Māori.
And that's why I want to talk about just the practicalities of it. What actually happens? It's 2 out of 13 or 14 people, so they can't control the vote. They are providing information that other councillors don't have, which makes for better decisions. We all know that a group of people making decisions need, they need all that information. I mean, it's a large area.
We need
area.
The many voices. And when others can see there's diversity sitting at a decision-making table, hopefully it will inspire them to see themselves, whoever they might be, whether they're, if they might be Muslim, they might be Chinese, and if they see a diversity around a decision-making table, one would hope that they could see themselves in those roles as well. So there are many aspects of positivity that comes from having our Māori ward councillors. And I must add to this as well, Aaron, their wards are massive. Each of them cover half of the district each, so they've got a massive role, and also they sit on the community committees and the community boards that make up those areas as well.
So it's about three of them each, I think. Oh no, more, three community boards each, and then there's, I don't know how many community
Tilly's
committees.
Tilly's got five. And she's our Māori ward councillor that sits in this area.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of how many Pāni Ora has, but they are quite considerable. So there is a lot of time and energy that they need to put their mind to. So I have been advocating, as you know, for the entire time that I've been in council, actually, about Māori representation in the decision-making. And so I've been pushing for our council to make a stance, a public stance on our position on Māori wards. And
like some other councils have, like Waipa, for instance.
Council. Yeah. Sue O'Regan has come out, and actually
she's
Waipa mayor.
Yep.
And they came out with a statement, very strong, that said Waipa Council slates central government.
Okay, right. They weren't beating about the bush.
They weren't
that
beating
then.
About the yeah. bush. Max Baxter from Otorohonga Council, he is the mayor. He's come out very strongly.
And these are what we would expect to be conservative rural areas. And
well, I saw someone had put on a post, of a friend's post, who had put up about the stance of Waipa Council, and someone said, crikey, that's an amazing stance, given I thought they were the Oklahoma of councils.
Yeah, so, clearly not.
Clearly not. And also Moko Tapania from the Far North District Council, Tori Whānau, Mayor Stoltz from Gisborne. So there have been many mayors who have come out from the get-go to say that this is not on, and that it's an overreach of central government into local government decision-making, particularly when this coalition government, a number of the members stood for local decision-making, and hence the repealing of the Three Waters reform to local waters done better. So then councils could have their autonomy over their decision-making and that localism, and yet here they are with a proposed bill that asks us to rescind, to repeal, or to go to a binding poll.
Alrighty, so more boring stuff.
Sorry, I get a bit on my high horse, don't
I? Well,
you?
I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
Well, we've got our community board meeting that's coming up this Wednesday. So again, the public forum will be at 1:30 in the supper room with our main hui happening at 2 o'clock, so everyone is more than welcome to come along to our board meeting.
Okay, and a couple of things from the last meeting. Do we know anything about the Greenslade playground? Or is Dennis looking after that? Greenslade.
Oh, they sent out a. They did a mailbox drop on preferred options that the residents in that area would like. In fact, I caught up with a woman on Sunday who lives at near the Greenslade area, and she said, I've filled in my form and I've sent that back.
So that's since the last community board meeting?
Since the last community board meeting. So I haven't heard back what the results of that are. So obviously she'd said that on Sunday and that she'd sent it back last week. So no doubt we're waiting for the return of those, excuse me. So it'll be exciting to see. I'm sure most people probably chose the more natural option because there are a couple of options for the playground.
There was a talk about what they were calling a natural playground, which
versus the more traditional playground of concrete and so on. So look forward to the results of that survey.
Okay. The drive transport strategy, why did I write that on the list?
Because we spoke about that at the last community board meeting, and we staff are going to run a workshop with the community board in July. They're just finalising some of the details so they can actually have the – it's not a – you know, it will be – completed in its draft form for the community board to go through it. So we'll be running a workshop on that in July.
Okay, and is that just for us in this in your ward, or is it for the whole district?
No, it's just a draft. It's the transport strategy for Raglan.
Okay, all right, that's good.
For more of the urban area of Raglan as opposed to the rural area.
So this means bypass roads is an obvious one.
Yep. Planning the next 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, over time.
Okay, and yep. Also public transport. Does that come into a transport strategy?
That's a really good question. From what I read, it doesn't. I'm actually not going to comment on that because okay. I don't know.
All right, you'll find out. I don't know why. We're doing an interview at the moment, so the phone is not going to get answered in any sensible useful
way.
Oh,
maybe someone's got a question.
They usually will text me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hopefully, anyway.
Maybe we could do talkback radio.
I've just hung up on them again. And like, folks, if you're listening, what I do is I put them into the mixing desk so they can actually hear us talking. So I was hoping they'd get the idea that we're busy.
Oh, okay.
But they probably just thought there was something wrong with it. Anyway.
Okay. Maybe they can't hear.
If someone was ringing up to actually ask us a question, that would surprise me because that doesn't usually happen.
Oh, we could do talkback radio.
You can never guarantee. I'd have to go out and tell people, please call me at this time to make sure I've got enough people. Our population is too small.
Too small.
It'd be like really contrived. It'd all be members of my family.
or mine.
Yes. Yeah, that would be a setup with the councillor, and that wouldn't make either of us look very good. So the draft transport strategy, yeah, that's
in play.
And when will we get to see it?
That's a really good question, and we'll find out at our workshop, because it will actually go out for consultation to the community.
Okay. And roads, we know that Tehutawai Road's been fixed. Did someone look at, did they get stuff out to Whanga Road as well?
I'm not sure if Tehutawai Road is fixed.
Oh, it was smoothed over.
It's been worked on, but I need to follow up on that.
My understanding was they need to sort the drains out to stop stuff flowing across.
They need to sort the drains out and more metal and,
which will require next year's budget because there isn't enough money or time to do that
We need to fix it.
Yeah. But
I've received videos from locals, lots of feedback, and my brother-in-law, who was the person who went out on his tractor with the bucket end to do
smooth over stuff,
repairs and stuff like that. Yeah. And he's lived up at Tehutawai Road his entire life. They've got the farm up there. And even my nephew has said it's the worst he's ever seen it in 25 years.
And we haven't had that much rain, so yeah, it sounds like a ditch thing. I just wanted to mention for listeners, the council's financial year starts on the 1st of July. So when we say next year, it's not that far away.
It's not that far away, but regardless of that, the work needs to be done.
Yeah, but there has been, like, someone's been up there with a grader and smoothed over. A couple of weeks ago I was up there, and there's a little bit of Tehutawai Road where I knew there was a problem.
Last weekend, this week.
Yeah, but every time it rains, it might refresh itself. Okay.
And the hearings for the annual plan will be happening 14th, 15th and 16th.
Because we mentioned that submissions have closed, but then people can go and talk to it.
That's exactly right.
And then what happens? Does council then write up more stuff and you guys vote on what happens?
Well, we deliberate. We listen to and ask questions of the submitters. So we read all of the submissions, and then the submitters can choose to be heard in chambers. So we really, really appreciate when people not only do a written submission, but they actually come in and speak to it. And I know that Dennis has done a submission as himself and not as the community board, so he'll be coming in. So no doubt there'll be others who'll be coming in to talk to us, whatever that might be on. And then once we've listened and we've read all of the submissions, we go into deliberations. So we debate, we corridor, we discuss And then we make decisions from that point.
Okay, all right. The water tower, I know that at one point you were calling for artists, interest from artists to do something on the water tower.
That's exactly right. And according to our project lead, Jacqueline Anderson, that's been a great process. And she's been working with a very dynamic panel. And there will be a media release today. So
all right.
It's very exciting, and we're excited. And so that's as much as I can say, but it's all guns blazing, so to speak. So,
okay.
Yes, Jacqueline will be coming out with that media release today.
Okay, and last time I communicated with you, it was about the water tower overflowing.
Oh, that's right.
Which was actually,
and it was overflowing. I actually, because when you called, I was driving over, hands-free, might I add. I was coming towards town from home because I was heading off to council. And I didn't quite, my eyes didn't quite believe what they saw at first of an overflowing.
It was like a waterfall,
reservoir.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a waterfall. And then there was a moat around the outside of the water tower. And I was standing there and I had called it in and someone had already called it in at 7:30.
Yes. So, yeah, we should point that out. Actually, a citizen had put in, a resident had
a
put in.
A service request they had called through, which was great. And so the gentleman I spoke with had said, oh, no, it's been called in at 7:30 this morning. And then I was standing there when he put me on hold to see what the outcome was. I then suddenly thought to myself, I wonder if the water tower is going to explode. And if it does, I'm going to go with it. So
yeah, you wouldn't want to be anywhere near it.
It was actually quite amazing, the volume of water. And there were even little holes and up the very top that was spouting out water as well.
Yeah, so it must have been. There must be a lot of pressure there. It doesn't. Maybe there isn't a designed place for it to overflow.
I think in normal circumstances, maybe, but the fuse had blown in the wherever it was that controls the filling of the water
so
tower.
So the brain wasn't working, so it kept pumping.
The brain
pumping.
Wasn't working like an old ball cock in a toilet cistern that you know that.
Yeah,
once it rises to a certain point, it stops it from continuing to fill.
Mm. Anyway,
that's it.
The staff fixed that pretty quickly that day. Yeah.
They did fix it really quickly.
I wanted to mention that so that more people remember about that.
To always call
the service request.
The service request, you can do it either by phoning in the 0800 number or just an 07 number that is accessible on the council website. Some things take longer to have a turnaround. But
there's an app too, isn't there, now?
There's the Antenio app that you can actually put on your smartphone.
Is that the number there?
Yep.
0800 492 452.
Yep. And so call that in. And you may want something done immediately, but depending on the type of request it is, it can take up to 5 days for staff to get back to you.
See, with that, I thought it would be quicker to call you, but someone had done the service request through the usual form,
yeah,
and it happened instant. They were on top of it instantly.
And the guy said it'd been called in at 7:30. I've checked with staff. There's already someone on the way out. And that when I got out to Greenslade Road, one of the staff vehicles, the Mackay ones, were already coming through.
Mm. So there we go. Some positive news about the council people for you.
Yes, exactly.
Because we tend not to focus on that. All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And you're off to the wharf opening 10 o'clock this morning, aren't you?
Off to the wharf opening with my apron and barbecue tongs in tow.